to the Fifth Kind.
Welcome to The Fifth Kind. I'm Paul Wallace, and today I'm talking to Alan Stivelman, who is the writer and director of the wonderful movie Witness of Another World. Alan, welcome to The Fifth Kind.
Hello, Paul. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
Likewise. It's great to meet you. First of all, I've got to say congratulations on making such a beautiful movie. I think it's quite different to anything anyone will have seen before. And I don't want to say too much to spoil the movie because it's just been released. But as a way in, I'll say that the movie really weaves together some rich themes in the life story of one person, Juan Perez. And the themes are ET contact, questions of human consciousness, and the question of ancestral memory and how that speaks to those things. And I love the way all those weave together in the life of Juan Perez. So I'll ask you first about him. How did you first meet Juan Perez, and what was it that attracted you to his story?
Well, the first time that I met Juan was 5 years ago. I was writing a story, but that time, 6 years ago, actually, I was doing automatic writing, and I was writing a story about an abduction. I didn't know why I was writing this kind of story, because it wasn't my kind of field. My passion was mainly archaeology, the search of lost civilization in the Andes, in America. And I never thought that I was going to study the UFO phenomenon the way I did. So I bought a book. It's called Los Extraños, is the Strangers. It was written by a psychologist and a psychiatrist. And one of these chapters talked about the Juan Perez case. And the short, long story is like I met this psychiatrist while I was presenting my previous movie, Humano, in his hometown in Rosario. And while we were having a pizza, when we were lunching, he started to speak to me about one of his most significant cases that he studied. It was the Juan Perez case. And he showed me a footage when Juan was 18 years old. That footage, it's part of the movie. Juan is trying to explain what he saw while he's presenting his case in the middle of a room with plenty of UFO fans. And he broke down. He started to say something like, "You won't believe me." And then he broke down. And when I saw that footage, I felt something. It was quite strange because it was the first time that I was seeing a real contactee trying to explain what he saw. And I was seeing a traumatized person, traumatized child. And I felt that I wanted to meet him, that I wanted to make contact with him. And I said to Dr. Nestor Berlanda that I want to go to the countryside in order to find him and meet him. That's it. I just want to meet that person. And 4 months after, I went to the countryside, I went to Acevedo. It was his hometown, but that time he was working on a hacienda, a very big, an old farm. And when I met him, it was one of the most profound experiences. While I was chatting with him, while I was exchanging experiences, and he was trying to explain to me what he saw, what he experienced, and also the dreams that he had after that experience. I remember that I was recording all the things that he was sharing to me, but then he started to cry, and then I stopped my camera. I wasn't able to keep recording, and I just started to listen, and that's it. And I felt something very strange in my body while I was next to him. I don't know why, something from his aura or from his, I don't know. I was with a friend of mine by that time, and she felt the same thing, that we were involved in something very strange. The atmosphere was not normal, not regular. And then I remember when we said goodbye, he showed us, he said to us, like, please come back, I will be waiting for you. Please remember me. And those words kept echoing in my head for 4 years, but I needed to study plenty of things in order to be able to prepare this project, this movie. So it was a really long trip since the first time that I get in touch with Juan.
So how long did it take you to make the movie after that first encounter?
Well, since then, it took us 4 years to reach research, study, because I bought plenty of books about UFO phenomenon. I took this case and this project very seriously, because I was dealing with a person, a human being, and also it was a very wounded person, very fragile. From one perspective, he was a very big and brave man, very gaucho. You can see it on the picture. He's very brave, but in the other hand, he was really fragile, very innocent. So I needed to be prepared psychologically and also physically to deal with this kind of project. And then it took us 2.5 years to make the film ready for you and all the audience.
Yes. So Juan Perez had this close encounter when he was 12 years old, and then you share the moment with us in the movie. At the age of 18, he's speaking to that room full of people and he breaks down. It's a very powerful moment. It pulls us all into the movie. We want to know what happened and what's going to happen next. And it's a great place to start, because when people want to be dismissive about close encounters or UFO phenomena, when they hear of a sighting or somebody bringing a report, they'll often say, oh, here's somebody, they just want their face on the TV, or they just want their 15 minutes of fame. And it's so clear with Juan Perez that is not the case at all, quite the opposite. Many people, after their encounters, experience PTSD. Many people take years and years to process what they've experienced. Can you say a little more about what was the impact on the life of Juan Perez of this encounter?
Well, I think his whole life changed after this event. He felt that his case was more like a curse rather than a gift. As you said, he wasn't looking for 15 minutes of fame. He doesn't use a cell phone. He's not used to be on internet, watch movies. He was a really simple man trying to have a normal life, regular life in the countryside with his animals, with the nature. He's a farmer, a gaucho. A gaucho is like a cowboy. So, and if you read the original reports, you will notice that Juan used the word tractor or house of worker for referring the ship, the UFO ship. So this case is in the mind of a 12-year-old kid that what he was thinking, that what he was seeing was just his friends from the farm, not UFOs or alien. So regarding what you asked me, I think there are plenty of levels of answers. I have to take the words from the last shaman that I met, Grandfather Francisco, that he told me that Juan, but that time he was trying to seek to himself, because at the age of 10, his grandfather passed away. And I think for Juan, his grandfather was everything in his life. He was his guide, his connection with his roots, because he was the only one who carries the Guarani roots. So after that, some connection cut it in the world of Juan. So he was really lonely, trying to get answers, why his grandfather passed away, why is he still alive, etc., etc. So he got an answer from the other world, but it took 4 decades of pain, of sacrifices, in order to gain trust for himself, in order to believe that what he saw was real, because the world was very, very hard for him, because nobody believed him, even his relatives. So it's really hard for Juan to deal with the world. So that's why he separate from his family, from the world, and live as a refuge in the countryside with only his animals and his thoughts. Because every night Juan asked himself, why this happened to me? So in a way, when I started this project, I wanted to get answers to him. And one of the answers was, why this happened to him?
Yes. When people experience close encounters, it can be profoundly isolating for all the reasons you've just said. And that is really illustrated powerfully in what happened to Juan Perez. But the wonderful thing about your movie and what happens in it is we become part of a journey that he makes, and there's an experience of closure that happens in the movie. And that happens because of your connection with Juan and the way you then bring in Jacques Vallée and Nestor Berlanda into the conversation. And then we become part of what you experience together, this journey towards closure. This is part of what makes it such a beautiful movie. It's so much about being human. And I wanted to ask you, when you met Juan, he was still in that very isolated place. How did you win his confidence to make such a transformational journey on film?
That's an excellent question. I still don't have an answer for it. I think, well, I gained his trust thanks to, because I was sincere with myself and with him also. I visit Juan plenty of times before I started to make this project happen. Also, I visit his family, his mother, his father, also his siblings. And I don't know, I think it was something very organic that came through. One thing led to the other, and without knowing it, we were doing this journey together. And I think if you ask Juan, he will not have an answer to. It was something that when you, because I consider to Juan my friend, and also to Dr. Berlanda and Dr. Jacques Vallée. I still have emails from Jacques once or twice a week. And if you ask Jacques, he considered to me as a friend too. So we all became a little family trying to get answers to Juan, but also you mentioned the idea of a closed circle. In a way, everyone who was involved in this movie, we closed a circle from ourselves. Jacques Vallée also, Dr. Berlanda and myself, we all close a circle from one thing or another. We all did.
Yes. Jacques Vallée, clearly it was important for him to come and be part of this experience. He had really stayed in his mind with the story of Juan Perez. And can you say a little bit about what it was that made this case so important to him?
Well, that was my biggest question before he arrived to Argentina, was why is he coming? Because the background of this story is that I sent him a letter asking to make an interview in San Francisco. And that's my only goal, because I know Jacques Vallée is a man, he works in Silicon Valley also, and he doesn't like to make interviews or stay or be present in shows or movies. He's really low profile, and that's one of the things that I really liked from him. And I asked just to make an interview in San Francisco in order to ask things about the case of Juan, if he remembered, blah, blah, blah. So what I got from him was an email, a very warm email, saying that he's inviting me to go to San Francisco. But at the end of the letter, well, in the middle, he said that he was really sad because Juan was not good after this event. He was, after 4 decades, he was very sad knowing that Juan was still traumatized from that event. And but at the end of the letter, he said that he has an idea, but he didn't want to interrupt our project or bother me. But he was asking me to go to Argentina to stay with me, with Juan, and with the whole crew in order to help Juan. That was his goal. And I say, perfect. Please come. And I want to mention something that was quite special from him, that he spent 6 months studying Spanish 3 times a week because he wanted to talk with Juan without intermediates.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
That's the kind of person that I want to highlight, because he's a wonderful, well, he's a wonderful man.
I think this is something that we really feel watching the movie, that we're watching the story of friendship, and it makes it very powerful, very poignant. I wanted to ask a little more about something that is mentioned just in passing in the movie, and that is that the encounter affected Juan's consciousness in various ways, in particular in his dreaming. And he was having some experiences of precognition in his dreams. And I got the impression that when, as a young man, he had tried sharing this with the people around him, it wasn't well received. He didn't get a nice response. Have I read that right?
You said it perfectly. And one of the things that I wanted to know is, where is his trauma? Because when I met him and when he shared to me his case, for example, what he saw, what he experienced that morning on September 1978, when he explained me the whole event, it's not very traumatic. It's quite, it's special because he's seen something spectacular, a ship, two beings, but nothing more happened. There are no kind of
no violence,
nothing. So I was wondering why this man kept this trauma for so many years, and he's so fragile with this. And the thing that I noticed, and because asking these things to Juan is really hard, because if I say to him, like, where's your trauma? He would know. So what I found out is that his dreams were actually the hardest part of the whole event, because he told me that when he go to sleep on his right side, he will enter a real dream. And what he said to me, is that these dreams are more real than our reality. And most of them are dreams about accidents, about death, from his relatives, from friends of him, from co-workers. And those events happened after 2, 3, or a week after that he dreamt about these events. Mm. And he was not able to stop them from happening. Yes. So in the middle of the night, he started to move in order to break that dream and stop that from happening. And that was a living hell for him, because yes. he felt that he was the only one in the world that was having these kind of premonition dreams.
Yes. And he thought if he could break the dreams, he could stop the things from happening.
Yeah.
Which, how can you live with that? That would be impossible to handle. I was really struck by that part of the story because I have a friend here in Australia, and I was thinking of him as I was watching your movie. He had his first close encounter when he was 20. His whole family had this experience on their rural farm in Australia of UFO craft coming and visiting their property. And these craft would come to their property every few months over a 20-year period. And one of the impacts on my friend was on his dreams. Mm. And he started having a lot of anxiety around what happened in his dreams. The thing that grounded him and his family was that though they are Australians, their ancestry is as Native Americans. They're the Cherokee people. And the Cherokee people have an ancestral memory, an ancestral narrative of ancient contact with another species. And that background in his family meant that they were not frightened and that they could actually begin processing what they were experiencing. Now, in the case of Juan Perez, his roots are in the Guarani people, and that becomes an important part of the story. What made you think to connect him with the elders of the Guarani people? How did you know that would help?
Well, I have to say that it was thanks to his mother, because I will let you know. Well, one of the questions that I had during the whole project was if there is a connection between the ancestry, the lineage of these contactees, and the UFO phenomenon.
Mm.
The reason is this. When I met Juan in 2014, I also met his mother. She's not part of the movie because she's really shy, he's really close. And she was really terrified about the idea of making a movie, and also she's terrified about these beings, this entity. She was telling me like she was referring to me as son. You don't understand. My son was marked, referring to the mark that Juan had in his right arm. They know where he is all the time. And my son will be kidnapped by these entities. And I told her, like, don't worry, madam. I'm here just trying to understand what are we dealing with. What is this phenomenon that is happening to Juan and to plenty of people? And I want to make this movie because I know there are plenty of Juan Perez around the world. And she told me something like, we were alone on the countryside walking, and she told me, son, you don't understand, what happened to Juan happened to me also when I was a child, and that was a secret that she was sharing to me. I don't know why, because that secret nobody knew it about this event, even Juan. But that time I just froze, and I didn't know what to say or what to do, because she also told me that she was kidnapped very violently, and plenty of information that I was not able to deal with. But after reading and studying, I started to like make connections, and I started to say, okay, so if his mother had this kind of experience, and also Juan is something that it's probably jumping from one generation to the another generation. Mm. And the mother of Juan is the only one who had the Guarani roots, because the grandfather, the one who passed away when Juan was 10 years old, was the father of her mother, of his mother. Mm. So then I realized that probably there is a connection. And the first step that I took by doing this film was going to the jungle, to Paraguay, in order to meet plenty of shamans. And I got these answers.
In your contact with the Guarani elders, and you've had contact with other shamans as well, do you find that they have many references in their canon of knowledge that relate to ET species? Certainly in my reading, I find, if I read ancient narratives, I find them to be full of reference to extraterrestrial beings. Do they speak in those terms, or do they have other ways, other language for describing these phenomena? What do you find? We seem to have frozen.
Hello?
Oh, you're back. You're back.
Yeah. Sorry. You were saying?
So I was saying, do you find in your study of shamanic knowledge references to extraterrestrial beings, or do they have different language for describing these things?
Exactly, different language. And mainly the Guarani tradition is oral, so it's really hard to get these kind of symbols or archetypes or ideas regarding the extraterrestrial hypothesis or mentions about UFO. So when I went there, I started to ask them what they think about the UFO phenomenon, about the alien, about the phenomenon of abduction. I had plenty of answers, very strange ones, because as you know, elders from indigenous cultures, they speak in a very different language, because their way of speaking, it's more symbolic. They use plenty of metaphors.
Yes.
So, summarizing what I have to say to you is that they were speaking to me in that there is a phenomenon that it's not from this world, but it's not also from this universe. It comes from another dimension. The dimension from them, from the Tupamiri or Tupa. Tupa means God. And Tupamiri are like little gods or little spirits.
Yes.
What Plutarco, for example, was saying to me is that if this is our world, this glass, the world or the realm of Tupamiri is next to our world, but not the world as a physical world, just a dimension. And they have the tools or the technology or the ability to come to our material world and then to disappear and go again to the unmaterial world. But so far, we don't have the tool to go to the unmaterial world. So we are just witnesses of this phenomenon that we call UFO phenomenon. But for them, it's really simple. It's the world of the Tupamiri. But one of the things that Sylvia, the other shaman from another ethnic, is Pain Tabitera, and she told me that we have to be very careful about this phenomenon, because the things that appears in the skies or whatever, a phenomenon that is not human, it has two faces. And she was talking to me about the idea that this phenomenon could come from the good side or the bad side.
Yes.
The light or the shadow. And we as humans or Western people or white people, we don't have the tools to know which side is which. But these shamans have the tools because they will start to confront that phenomenon and start to fight in order to obligate that phenomenon to show the real like shape, because what it shows is not the real thing. What is behind holographic is the real thing. But it's this theme or this aspect was really hard to digest. So that's why I didn't put it on the movie, because it's really hard to interpret. So there is a movie.
I think that there's a moment in the movie that touches on all those questions you've just raised, and I'm going to come back to it in just a moment. But it's interesting how everything you've just described was coming from the shamanic elders, found an echo in what Jacques Vallée was saying as well. Yeah. He had a different way of saying it. But I think we'll pause for a moment. We're going to see some footage, and then I'll come back to that point you've just made. So I'm hoping we're going to go to some footage.
People often think about close encounters and UFO phenomena as if they were something new, as if it were a post-war phenomenon. But that's really not the case. The moment we begin to listen to ancestral memory and read the world's ancient texts, it becomes clear that the interweaving of human history and ET contact is as old as humanity. Accounts of close encounters go back thousands of years. In our historic art, in prehistoric cave paintings, in our ancestral memory and ancient texts, reports of contact with beings from out of this world pepper the pages of human history.
In ancient times, men used to live side by side with the supernatural and gave it a sacred value. Thousands of people throughout the history of mankind have claimed encounters with the supernatural. The UFO phenomenon could be an archetypal modern image of the sacred. We demonize the unknown. We are afraid of it. I must confess that I also fear the unknown, but I want to break that barrier and discover if this is a real phenomenon or just something that has been made up.
Juan is in the middle of this encounter. Then he appears to have an encounter with his grandfather, who is deceased. And it reminded me of a moment in the movie Contact, the Jodie Foster movie, where she has an encounter with a multidimensional being, but she perceives it as her father. And so that moment in your movie raises the question, is this a spiritual experience? Is it a multidimensional experience? What kind of phenomenon are we looking at? And I just wondered how you interpret that. I've just lost the audio on Alan. I can't hear him.
Now, can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
Excellent. Well, I was talking to you is that moment was a really mind blown, because what happened with that vision or with that moment was a lost memory for Juan. If you saw the original report, if you see it, you will notice that there is no vision from his grandfather. No travel, know nothing. So I wanted to make a regression to Juan because I wanted to find if there are some lost memories on his case. It was something like, I wanted to prove that idea. And while Dr. Berlanda was practicing the regression to Juan, after 2 hours of regression, Juan, while he was asking to this tall being from the experience, he started to ask, why to me? Why this happened? Why are you here? Why are you doing this to me? And the tall being started to squeeze the arm of Juan. And Juan, at that time, he had a vision, or he went with them to somewhere else. I don't know, and it's really hard to guess. But what he saw was actually the answer for him, because it was really hard for him to understand it when he was 12 years old. But the answer was that this has happened to him because he's one of them. He's one of this tribe. He's one of the Guarani. And he needed to get in touch with his roots. He needed to go back to his origins, because what he received from this event was the gift of the clairvoyance. And this is the most important gift for the Guarani people. But for Juan, was a curse. But why was a curse? Because he was not able to integrate that experience, that gift. If Juan was born and raised in a Guarani tribe, the story will be very different. Probably he will be about the shamanic world, and probably he will be, by now, he will be another shaman. Because he has the ability to see beyond. But in the case of Juan, the story was quite different. And the story of Juan is the story of everyone, I think, that is not connected to himself, to the nature, to ourselves, to our origins. Even by me, I was not connected to my origins. I don't know. Argentina is a... it's a mix of races. People came from Italy, Spain, Russia, Germany. So we don't know who we are. And myself, as an Argentinian, I was dealing with, okay, I'm helping a human being, a gaucho, to get back to his roots. But what about my roots? I have Jewish roots, but I was cut it when I was 12 years old. I didn't want to know anything from my religion, and no kind of religion. I want to be free and connect to the divinity or to the sacred places by myself, not without like dogmas or rules. So I was, when I was doing this film, I was in the middle of a big struggle with my beliefs, with what was happening with Juan, with these entities that we don't know who they are, because they have like very erratic movements. They appear and disappear whatever they want. And when I was doing this movie, I just wanted to have a contact and sit with them, take a beer and say, what's going on? Why are you doing this to Juan, to my friend?
Yes.
But thanks to the story of Juan, thanks for the things that happened during the shooting, I started to understand plenty of things, and after the movie also, because I want to highlight this. It's really important when we go to the field and research contactees and witnesses to make a follow-up after months and years. Because, for example, in the case of Juan, after 2 years that we finished the movie, Juan started to remember that he had at least two other cases, two other contacts. one when he was 40 and another when he was 45. And also his mother confessed to Juan that she also had this experience, and it was a really powerful and healing moment, because Juan started to understand that he was not alone, because the same that happened to his mother happened to him. And now at this present moment, they are helping each other, because now they see the phenomenon when they are together in their house. So it's something very fantastic. Probably if I called to Juan next week, I will have some news about this sighting.
Oh, wow. We must have another conversation another time, because there are so many parallels between what you're saying and what I've heard from the friend I mentioned before of Cherokee. Clearly, you really connected with what was happening with Juan because of everything that was going on with you, and you had an openness to all the phenomena that Juan had experienced, and openness to the possibility of extraterrestrial entities, an openness to shamanic clairvoyance, or all those sort of things. I wonder if I can ask a question about you for a moment, Alan. What things have you seen and experienced that have brought you to that place of thinking, these are things I need to study, these are things I need to take seriously and engage with?
That's a good question. Plenty of things happened to me, but regarding the UFO phenomenon, I had two sightings. One when I was 24 years old, and I was in Cusco in Peru. That was the first time I was with a shaman from the Andes, an Andean shaman, and we were chatting and taking some beers, having some fun. I was asking to him about life, about death, about the universe. We were seeing the stars in the roof. And a weird light started to move. And I was having a headlamp in my head. And I started to make some lights, like Morse code. At that time, I was very skeptic about the UFO phenomenon. So I was laughing to that light, because I wanted to believe, but I didn't care about what this what was light was doing. So I was started to make this Morse code. The shaman started to laugh, like, "Oh, what are you doing? What are you doing? What are you saying?" And I'm saying, like, if he comes in peace or not. And then this light disappeared, and we didn't care about that, and continue having some conversations. And then we go to bed. But 3 o'clock in the morning, I woke up and my eyes were not able to open it. And I touched them and I felt that two balls were in the middle of my eyes. And I looked into the mirror and I was like the Elephant Man, the movie from David Lynch. And I was horrified, like, what is going on? I'm not allergic. I'm not having any kind of illness. So I'm very healthy person. And I didn't know what was happening. So I said to myself, well, probably it's the cold. It's very cold. So probably I have an inflammation because of the cold. And the next day, when the shaman look at me, he was horrified too. And I said, if you are horrified, what can I do? I said, let's make some, how can I say, it's coca leaves. They are like a way of predicting the future or asking to the providence. And yes, the shaman sat on a table and started to see the coca leaves. And what he got from it was like, I was not prepared to make contact with the invisible world. And the invisible world showed me in the way of an illness that this thing is real. That the light that I seen the previous night was real, and I don't have to be like, I don't have to make mockery or get fun of it, because I was a child, and I'm not prepared to see things that I'm not able to see. So then after that, I realized that I have to be very cautious with these things that for these kind of people are sacred. And the whole trip, it was the beginning of a trip or for 6 months. And the week, and for the next conversation, I will tell you my experience with the Apus. The Apus for the Andes are the spirits from the mountains. And I had the pleasure to participate in a sacred and hidden ritual, that is the ritual with the Apus, with these spirits that for us, they could be aliens or extraterrestrial, but for them are just the guardians of the mountains.
Oh, Alan, we've got to talk to you again. That deserves a whole interview all on its own. I think anyone who watches your movie is going to be impacted at a number of levels. Everyone, I think, should see this movie. You'll be changed by watching it. But Alan, I wanted to ask you, what difference has it made in your life, the making of this movie?
I have to say in many levels, because one of the biggest challenge that I had in my life was to deal with the idea of death. For 3 or 4 years, I was going to bed and ask myself about the idea of death, what is afterlife. And I don't know why this question was linked to my movie, because one of the other inner question, I think the most profound one, was if there is a connection between afterlife and the UFO phenomenon. And the vision that Juan had with his grandfather, when that thing happened, I felt inside of me that I got an answer from that experience. And I don't care if this is not true, or Juan had a vision that was just a manipulation from these entities. I don't care it, because by that time, for me, it was a synchronicity, because that was a minor question. It was not exposed on the movie, nor to Juan. It was something for very intimate for myself. And after that experience with Juan, and after making this movie, that anxiety from trying to know what is afterlife was very, now it's very calm for me, because now my whole perception of reality changed, because now we don't know nothing about what is reality. We speak a lot about reality, about consciousness, about conscious, but we don't know what is consciousness. It's where is our consciousness? It's in our in our mind. It's above our body. When we when we passed away, we are still alive thanks to our consciousness. We don't know. So those kinds of questions and the answer that I got thanks to Juan was actually something very, like, very peaceful answers, that it was something very, I thanks to Juan and his experience, because it was a healing process for Juan, but also for me, and also for Jacques Vallée. It's a movie that plenty of people healed thanks to that.
There's a beautiful line in your movie that says, "We are never truly alone if we connect with our origins." Is that a message that you'd like us to take from the movie? And how would you like your movie to affect us?
Yeah, and that quote is for myself, because I, as I said, I separated from my origins, from my family, from my culture. During 10 years, I searched all the religions, trying to seek myself, and that's it. But I separate from my origins, from my roots. It was really difficult for me. And I think the message, the movie has plenty of messages, but one of the goals in this movie is to share a message of oneness, in a way that those ones that are in the world, I hope that these people, after watching my movie, could feel that they are not alone.
Alan Stivelman, thank you so much for joining us today. I absolutely love your movie. I'm recommending it to everybody. I think everyone should see it. I think if you see the movie, you can only think and feel differently about all the phenomena that we've discussed today. So see the movie. There's a link down in the comments where you can buy the movie. And if you go to witnessofanotherworld.com, you can find out where you can see it screened. So, Alan, thank you so much for joining us today on the Fifth Kind TV. It's been a great pleasure talking to you.
Thank you so much, Paul. And thank you, Tony, for making this happen from the Fifth Kind.
And we'll look forward to the next conversation.
I'm looking forward to.
All right. I'm waiting for Tony's voice to come in.
In the United States, a friend of mine,
hopefully Tony's still there,
is a professor of biology in the state of Utah, and he has studied UFOs extensively, and we have taken several trips together to speak to witnesses. His approach is to think of the UFO phenomenon as a display, as if the phenomenon was displaying itself, was exhibiting images that in part come from the background or from the consciousness of the observer, of the witness. So in a way, it's always the same phenomenon, but it appears as a slightly different, in a slightly different form for different witnesses.
People often think about close encounters and UFO phenomena as if they were something new, as if it were a post-war phenomenon. But that's really not the case. The moment we begin to listen to ancestral memory and read the world's ancient texts, it becomes clear that the interweaving of human history and ET contact is as old as humanity. Accounts of close encounters go back thousands of years. In our historic art, in prehistoric cave paintings, in our ancestral memory and ancient texts, reports of contact with beings from out of this world pepper the pages of human history.
In ancient times, men used to live side by side with the supernatural and gave it a sacred value. Thousands of people throughout the history of mankind have claimed encounters with the supernatural. The UFO phenomenon could be an archetypal modern image of the sacred. We demonize the unknown. We are afraid of it. I must confess that I also fear the unknown, but I want to break that barrier and discover if this is a real phenomenon or just something that has been made up.